Good evening and welcome to a special edition of Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is about to give his third State of the City address tonight from Symphony Hall. He's scheduled to speak at about half past the hour, and we will broadcast his speech in its entirety as soon as the mayor takes the stage. Now, 2016 was an interesting year for Walsh and for the city of Boston. The mayor has had some wins, GE moving its world headquarters to Boston, for example. He's also tangled with controversy, an ongoing federal investigation into alleged union extortion of developers. Well, tonight, Walsh is expected to lay out his 2017 vision for Boston. We'll likely hear new proposals on education, transportation, housing, and community relations. But unlike his past State of the City addresses, Marty Walsh makes tonight's speech with the pressure of a newly competitive 2017 mayoral race. So joining us tonight to talk through their views on the state of the city, Tiziana Deering. She's co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College. She's also a member of WBUR's Executive Advisory Board. Tiziana, great to have you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Also with us is Chris Dempsey, incoming director of the advocacy group Transportation for Massachusetts and former co-chair of No Boston Olympics. Chris Dempsey, it's great to have you back as well.
Thanks, Meghna.
And in just a couple minutes, we're expected to be joined by Michael Curry, former president of the NAACP Boston branch. Now, Tiziana and Chris, let me just start off by asking you briefly, if you had to come up with one phrase that you would use to describe what you want to hear from Mayor Walsh tonight, what would it be, Tiziana?
I think I'd like to hear more about vision. I think I'm going to pick one word, real vision. Where is the city going, not only in the next few years or to improve things that are already going well, but in 10, 15 years, what does this city do to be the city on the hill?
I see. Okay, vision. And how does that differ from what he's given in his previous two State of the City addresses?
Well, I don't know that it entirely differs, other than I wonder if we really know what the role of the city is going to be in this next wave, of the economy, in this next wave of lack of solidarity, in this next wave of what innovation is going to have to be around work, et cetera. And I think we are hearing a lot and have heard a lot from Mayor Walsh about here's what we do well and how we're going to do more of it.
Uh-huh.
But what's the next frontier for the city, and what's the next frontier Boston can lead in the role of the city? I'd love to hear something that ambitious and that sweeping.
Interesting. Okay, so Chris Dempsey, word or phrase that you would like to use to describe what you want to hear from the mayor?
I think it's about how does Boston embrace the right kind of growth and change? And that means growth in the number of residents who live in Boston, the ways they get from place A to place B, but also changes in things like mindsets. I think we're always a city that has embraced people from around the world and done a good job of embracing new ideas. But we're in this kind of turbulent time in our nation. And how can the city of Boston play a role in being that example? Being, as you said, Tiziana, that city on the hill that can really represent the best of not just Boston or Massachusetts, but the entire United States as a microcosm.
Well, I'm going to come back to both of you on those points in just a moment, but I want to turn briefly to Zeninja Enwemeka. She's a WBUR reporter who's at the State of the City address, and she joins us now. Zeninja, can you hear me?
Yeah. Hi, Meghna.
Hi. So what are you seeing so far? What's the mood like there?
So the mood is very festive. Right now, some of the introductory speeches have just begun, but it's a packed crowd here at Symphony Hall. A lot of people are really eager to hear what the mayor has to say on a number of issues, including housing, schools, as well as the presidential election that just occurred. So lots of folks chattering, lots of different people here. There's law enforcement, there's some union members, as well as just folks from the community who came out to hear the mayor's vision for 2017.
That's Zeninja Enwemeka reporting to us live from Symphony Hall in Boston. Zeninja, thanks so much. We'll see if we can come back to you before the mayor's scheduled to speak in about 25 minutes.
All right. Sounds great.
Well, Chris and Tiziana, let me turn back to you. So you both actually picked phrases and ideas that have a large degree of overlap in terms of vision and the right kind of growth. And I have to say, one of the things that that any mayor of a city like Boston, but and now it happens to be Mayor Walsh, has to grapple with is the fact that there's income inequality seems to span all of those issues. I mean, as we know, Boston has been found to be the most unequal city in the United States. There was a report from the Brookings Institution that found that the top 5% of households in this city make 18 times more than the households in the bottom 20%, and that was from the year 2014. And the Boston's inequality ratio, almost 18, was nearly twice that of the national average. I mean, so in a way, the wealth is also an engine for growth, but the inequality is an obstacle for the right kind of growth, Chris.
Yeah, so I think that's exactly right, Meghna. You know, it's income inequality is not necessarily an issue that a mayor has a lot of tools to address. There's so many macroeconomic forces that are really out of his or her control. But I think it's clear anyone that knows Mayor Walsh knows that he has not lost sight of or lost track of or connection to kind of his roots and where he came from, which is working class Dorchester. And I think he has a real sense for what people at all levels of the city are sort of feeling and experiencing. And I would not be surprised at all to hear him talk about how to mitigate some of those macroeconomic forces happening at a national or international level. Right here in our neighborhoods in Boston.
Well, I mean, in fact, at his inauguration 3 years ago, he spoke explicitly about income inequality as a major issue in Boston. And here's a little bit of what he said then.
We will expand opportunity so it reaches every person in every corner of our city. We cannot tolerate a city divided by privilege and poverty. We will protect and grow our sense of community.
That was at the mayor's inauguration. Tiziana Dearing reacted to that. He's had a couple of years now. And I take Chris's point that maybe there's a limited toolbox for what a mayor can do, given the global nature of the economy. But how do you think Walsh has done?
Well, so first, there's income inequality, which is how much the people at the top have and how much the people at the bottom have. And then there's economic mobility, which is your ability to move from the bottom to the top. And Boston actually ranks reasonably well in economic mobility rankings, but that still means that if you're in the bottom 20%, you've only got about a 10% chance of ever hitting the top. I do think a mayor can do some work on mobility, even if the macroeconomic forces that drive income inequality are far more macro. And so I think the question with Mayor Walsh is, what can he do more to bring jobs that allow people to earn stable incomes, to build some basic assets, to own a home that compounds over time and allows them to pass more on to the next generation, to create people who are or prepare people to be educated into a workforce that then grows. Those are actually things that you can begin to work on at the city level. And we've heard an agenda from him over the last couple of years that are pretty consistent.
I mean,
he
wants to build 50,000 new units of housing. That's a lofty goal, but we're expected to hear him say, you know, how far along towards that goal he's gotten tonight.
And who gets to be in that housing and how affordable it is and how else you can build assets and savings. Those are things he can work on for mobility.
Yeah. Well, so speaking of mobility, as important and compelling as the policy discussion is, because of the fact that City Councilor Tito Jackson has thrown his hat into the ring in terms of the 2017 mayoral race, we have to talk about the politics of this moment as well, because when Councilor Jackson did that, when he talked about when he announced his bid for mayor, he actually went straight to the income inequality issue in Boston. Here's what he said.
We seem to be judging our success by the number of million-dollar condos, skyscrapers, rather than the mobility of our families and the percentage of them who are managing to escape poverty.
To your point exactly, Tiziana. I mean, Councilor Jackson is saying we're actually looking at the wrong measures entirely. That's a pretty point of criticism at Mayor Walsh.
Well, and I do absolutely believe that income inequality is one thing, but it's always been there. The question is mobility. Can you have a shot at growing? If you're working and you're trying, can you get where you want to go? And I do believe that the city is the unit where one can begin to push on those levers. And that's, I think, what both of us mean. And if I'm not, I don't mean to speak for you, but what both of us mean about what is the city on a hill vision that begins to change what the mobility equation is, especially for people of color, where we increasingly understand whether you want to deny the data or not, that a history of immobility compounds the difficulties in achieving mobility in the next generation.
All well said and points well taken. But Chris Dempsey, do you think that this is, you know, a point of weakness for Mayor Walsh simply because of the facts of the income inequality, or perhaps the mobility not being where we'd like to see it in Boston?
I can understand why Tito is choosing that specific language to kick off his campaign. It is something that is on the minds of a lot of voters, and a lot of voters in the city of Boston. But I wouldn't necessarily say that it has been a weakness of Mayor Walsh. I think it makes sense for Tito to go after that. But we'll have to see how he draws that contrast with Mayor Walsh's actual record.
You're listening to special coverage of the 2017 State of the City Address. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is expected to give his third State of the City Address live from Symphony Hall in just about 20 minutes. And while we wait for the mayor to take the stage, we are speaking with Tiziana Deering. She's co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College. And you just heard from Chris Dempsey, incoming director of transportation for Massachusetts and former co-chair of No Boston Olympics. And Chris, I'm going to ask you about that in a moment.
I knew you would.
But we've just been joined by Michael Curry. He's former head of the Boston branch of the NAACP. Michael Curry, it's great to see you.
Great to be here.
So I started off asking both Tiziana and Chris a quick question about if you had to come up with one word or phrase that would describe what you want to hear from the mayor tonight, what would it be?
I would probably say results. When this mayor ran, he set some high expectations around what he would do. He talked about changing the face of the BRA. He talked about transforming communities, giving more opportunities for communities, and addressing communities that have a disparity in terms of some of the challenges they face with education, with crime, with health care. He now needs to tie that back to show what the results have been in those areas. So I'm looking to hear that in his speech today.
So if you say he needs to tie it back, is that your way of intimating that you haven't seen the kind of results that you want?
Well, you know, it's always a challenge for any elected official, right? A governor, a president, or a mayor, you come in with all these aspirations of what you'll do, and then you face the realities that you have to work with in budgets. You have to deal with the impact of federal funding and state funding. And that, you know, you may not have all the buy-in from the people who report to you, right? That's some of the challenges we've seen play out in his work with the unions and so forth. So, you know, there's some explanation, but there's no excuse. I always make the distinction. You can explain why you didn't do something, but there's still no excuse if you're that person living in Roxbury or Dorchester who feels like there's not enough opportunity, or that the housing crisis is hitting them in a different way than other communities. That, to me, is the urgency of the response that he gives tonight. He needs to speak to that.
Tiziana, react to that. What do you make of what Michael said?
Well, you know, it's interesting because on the one hand, it's hard to do anything about economic mobility in 3 years, for example. Again, we are still talking about macroeconomic forces. On the other, we have an... We as the city of Boston in particular, with its incredible strengths and also its complicated history, we have a particular obligation to understand. We have an extremely segregated poverty community in Boston. And the kinds of investments that we owe our communities in order to ensure mobility and to be able to maximize the potential of all of our citizens really does require a heavy lift and a level of passion about that kind of change that... I'm convinced this mayor is dedicated. I'm not convinced I've seen that level of passion on that piece of the agenda in these first couple of years, and it will be interesting to see where he can take that. I do think we've seen a lot of participatory indications from the mayor, which I really, really like. But there's more passion to be had, especially in this moment in this city.
Michael?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, he's been inclusive. He's been willing to have those tough conversations. But the reality is, and I've said this directly to him, I think this requires transformative leadership. I actually don't agree that you can't change the conditions of communities. You can't impact the sort of the job growth and economic development. There's an opportunity, one, to recruit businesses to communities. He talked about doing that. So how do you get businesses to locate within some of these communities? Two, the college readiness, the college courses that offer you to step into some of our industries. We have a major healthcare industry here. So there's the opportunity that I think he's made some progress.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, what about the development, say, around Dudley Square, for example? Trying to get, I think he was successful in getting opportunities for BPS high school grads if they want to go to Bunker Hill or Roxbury Community College that they can go, right?
Yeah, and I think there's credit to him. That's why I even referenced, I was thinking those two when you said that. But I think sometimes we got to look at what the problem is. And the scale of the problem and what the solution does to address those. And sometimes we tend to give elected officials a little too much credit because they've done some things, but it doesn't impact the problem. If the achievement gap doesn't move, if the unemployment rate is still twice as high in some communities, then how much have we really done? And I think a mayor can do that, but it requires some transformative leadership.
Well, I want to just listen to a little bit of tape of how Mayor Walsh talked about race and Boston in last year's State of the City address. So here's what he said in January 2016.
In community conversations on race and class, we are working through divisions that run deep in our city's social fabric. And we are turning this healing into real measurable change towards a more equitable city.
So, Michael Curry, that was just a year ago, roughly, this month. Again, I'm hearing that tension, like his passion and commitment towards having those conversations and what you're saying in terms of still not quite getting to the results you'd like to see.
Right, absolutely. I think, I mean, I credit him for being willing to have the one-on-one conversations and to allow his leadership team to have these conversations. I've had a beer summit with Commissioner Evans and Darnell Williams from the Urban League, 3 hours in Darnell's house talking about race and what we saw play out across the country. Superintendent Chang and I engage pretty frequently on issues, and the mayor and I. So the conversations are there, which is a great start. But the reality is, if you're that parent who feels like you don't have great choices in schools or your school's a level four, if you're that community where you look around and it seems like people, the mortality and morbidity rate is ridiculously high, which means less time to build wealth, less time to invest in your community, in your neighborhood, then, you know, there's an urgency to this that I don't know if we see yet. And I think that's what I'm listening to hear tonight.
So, Chris Dempsey, let me bring you back in here for just a second, because I hope this doesn't feel like too much of a switch, but Michael Curry was talking, or actually Tiziana, you were talking about how sometimes maybe your own team may not be fully aligned with you, and that makes it hard. Was that Michael who said that? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it seems as if the mayor hasn't been fully aligned with maybe what, you know, people in Boston themselves want. And I'm going to ask you about Boston 2024, because, for example, one of the early reasons why the mayor said he was excited about potentially bringing the Olympics to Boston was that it could provide the impetus for development and opportunity in the very neighborhoods that Michael Curry was talking about that perhaps haven't seen their fair share of that development and opportunity. And yet he got tons of pushback, and you were the face of that pushback. Talk to me about that.
So look, on the Olympic issue, obviously I was on the other side for many, many months. But I think we have to give Mayor Walsh some credit that he did get into that for the right reasons. I think he was very genuine when he said that he saw it as an opportunity to connect transportation nodes, to bring access to jobs to people that didn't have it today, and to showcase the city on the world stage. I think what the entire community of Boston and really Massachusetts learned through the very robust debate that we had was that it wasn't really going to do those things, and it actually threatened some of the shared goals that we all have, because it would have required massive public dollars being spent on things that weren't going to further those shared goals. And my sense is that as public opinion began to change, and by the way, it didn't start against the Olympics. So if you look at the first polling that WBUR did, it was actually supportive of the bid. But as people learned more, they liked it less. I think the mayor followed that, which is not to say that he was just putting his thumb in the air and seeing where the polls were, but he was learning himself, his team was learning, and they were having more and more conversations. I would think today, if you asked him, I haven't asked him this, but I would think he would say that he learned a lot from that process and that he's kind of moved on from it and is now back focused on some of those things that we all share as goals.
Yeah. So, I was thinking about your phrase was the right kind of growth. Yep. And, we've been talking on this show with all of you as guests over the past couple of years how Boston is very much a global city. It becomes more so with every passing year. The Olympics was one of those sort of tension points about what's the right kind of growth here. Talk to me, Tiziana, for a moment about the challenge that Mayor Walsh faces because of the global nature of Boston as a city as a leading city on the world stage.
So that creates a number of challenges. You know, at one level, when you are a gateway city like Boston is, one of the phenomenon you're going to see actually is a lot of income inequality because of the economics of when you enter a community for the first time and how you grow in that community economically. We are a city that brings in massive corporate headquarters that's involved in some of the most cutting-edge research and industry in the world. And I think the challenge of a magnificent city is to harness all of that power and then find a way for it to bring people together. Now, I know I'm going to sound like I don't care. It's still about solidarity and bringing people together and finding ways that the benefits of, for example, being a high-tech corridor can turn into opportunities for our youngest people to become the next high-tech geniuses, all of our youngest people. And it's making those connections between what is global and new and exciting with the latent talent and capacity of our full community. Mm. And recognizing that the full community has that talent and capacity and bridging that. That's hard, hard work.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to a special edition of Radio Boston. Tonight, in about 10 minutes, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is going to take the stage at Symphony Hall to give his 2017 State of the City address. And while we wait for the mayor to do so, we are speaking with Tiziana Deering, co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College. You also heard from Chris Dempsey. He's the incoming director. Director of Transportation for Massachusetts, and from Michael Curry, former head of the NAACP, the Boston branch of the NAACP. Now, Tiziana, what you said is a perfect setup for a major issue that the mayor has talked about year in and year out, that the city has talked about year in and year out. That's education. He's mentioned education in every one of his State of the City addresses. He's certain to mention it tonight. We've also already seen reporting of some proposals that he's going to unveil on Friday about paying for example, universal pre-K for all four-year-olds in the city of Boston. But Michael Curry, I mean, this is one place where, yes, as Tiziana says, Boston should have it has the talent of the young people right in the city itself to be the next generation of scientists, engineers, yeah, entrepreneurs. But, you know, the mayor faces the challenge of, has it been doing enough to cultivate that challenge?
Yeah, I mean, again, there's so many parts to this. I think no better place to start than education, right? Because part of the challenge we have is you have companies coming to us, and I'm on the board of Roxbury Community College, and saying, how do we make sure that we have the talent we need for the workplace? And what is the city doing in investing in our young people to prepare them to come work for me, right? So that's Vertex Pharmaceuticals. You go across the industry, that's Blue Cross Blue Shield, you name the company. And the challenge is the mayor and others, city council and others, have to be very intentional about how we do this. When you look at the unemployment rate in Boston, which I think is still around 4.9% or somewhere there about, and then 10+% in communities of color, that should disturb us. And again, I always have to remind people, this is not by accident. It's not because people want to be poor or that you see the poverty rate in the city was always somewhere around 20-something percent. We have to do something very intentional about that. That means getting people to the workplace, getting them into jobs, getting them the skills they need. This is all stuff that the mayor talks about, but I still think there's some risk that you take in order to deliver on it. That means you may have to upset some people. You may have to find ways to get people into that working environment that come with potential political risk. And the other piece to that is he has relationships in the legislature.
Right.
One of the reasons he got elected was because if he came out of that building and can go back and deliver some of the goods for the city of Boston, and we need to look at what that delivering has looked like.
Well, let's bring up a little bit of the sound from inside of Symphony Hall right now, if we can, because we're waiting for Dania Legros-Georges, the poet laureate, to speak.
Please be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, the poet laureate of the city of Boston, Dania Legros-Georges.
A seed. Before Martin Luther King Jr. became who we knew him to be, he drove a green Chevy from Atlanta to Boston, September 1951. We might imagine him spry and self-assured, a young black man in his 20s, hand hanging out of the driver's side window, the wind pushing against it coolly, agreeably. He drives with his future ahead of him, the long stretch of Interstate 81, up through the various states, the world a wide field, and arrives to take his place among the scholars of this town, dispersed in dorm rooms, apartments on Massachusetts Avenue. Now we see Martin in classes discussing with colleagues virtue and vice, the nature of the divine, what it is to be human and free, the universe. On Earth, we find Coretta Scott at the conservatory, Huntington Avenue, reading the patterns and history of song. Together, they will forge a new language, as all dreamers do, as all paired to the beat of marching feet, to the beauty of peace, and above peace, justice, the practice of a true humanity, in which one hand holds tight another hand, one arm reaches toward another arm, one bridge is built across the chasms that divide us, one seed dropped into the earth where all stand upon it equal. What begins in Boston expands beyond it and returns to it, a seed, a fledgling tree, a future, a beloved community. Thank you.
That's Danielle Legros-George, the poet laureate of the city of Boston. I think it may be too much to say, but I feel like in verse, she has captured very much the challenges and opportunities that we've been talking about here at this table in terms of what faces Boston through the story of the opportunity that the city offered Dr. Martin Luther King and what he took forward from here. Incredible. It was beautiful. I mean, Tiziana, react to what you just heard. And I mean, Michael Curry was just talking about literally, like, what do we do for the future kings,
right,
who are living in the city today?
I was quite touched by it. And what I found myself thinking is there a young man, a boy in Roxbury or Dorchester right now who sees the potential to be the next Dr. King in the infrastructure and the opportunities that we have for him here in Boston? And that the vision has to be that he does, that the next Dr. Kings have to come from Boston, that the next industry leaders also have to come from Boston, that the next spiritual leaders and poets and teachers all have to come from Boston. That's the city on a hill. And we have the capacity here to do that. We've done it before and we have the capacity to do it again. And I think what I'm hearing from the other people around the table and what I know I'm hungering for is the level of vision and inspiration that calls not only Boston, but the communities with whom Boston is interdependent to that level of aspiration and excellence. Yeah. Like, Boston doesn't live alone and can't
Absolutely.
Do it alone.
Well, the mayor is probably going to speak any moment here now. And while we wait for him to take the stage, I just want to ask all of you one final question. I feel that same hunger and that passion and the sense that Boston is on the cusp. Now, the question is it a precipice or is it the cusp of that next horizon that you've been talking about? Is it fair, though, or let me rephrase that, is it possibly unfair for us to pour so much of that hope and that drive into the office of the mayor?
I think it is fair to see him as a leader. And I think Michael's really been very eloquent tonight about that discussion around the talk versus the action, and how the city sort of rallies around the mayor and makes things possible. But we need leaders like Mayor Walsh. We need people in positions at City Hall who can really help us achieve that future. I don't think we're on a precipice, but I think we're always at risk of being sort of stuck. And we need people, and I think Mayor Walsh is making his best efforts to do this, to really get us to that next level and realize that potential.
Michael Curry?
You know, we face a risk in Boston, because if you look at many of the key topic areas and indicators for whether a city's doing well, we're doing better than many, right? So Boston has, whether it's crime, you name it, there's a tendency in cities like this just to sort of run the numbers,
right,
and talk about, in college, we called it being the best of the worst. Your numbers aren't great, but they're better than all these others. And there's a challenge for us to be much more aspirational than that, that if we want to lead on eliminating crime, if we want to lead on job growth and business development, then we have to find ways to deliver on that. And I think I never question Mayor Walsh's sincerity. But as an advocate, when you were doing the work around the Olympics, and an advocate who does the work around economic development and education, housing, civil rights, it's not about whether he's a nice guy or not. It's not about whether we like him. It's about whether you're delivering.
Yeah.
And thank God for us who do that on the outside, because it really inspires and pushes him to deliver on it as well. So,
well, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is about to take the stage at Symphony Hall any second now. We just wrapped up with some music from Boston Arts Academy. They sang a spiritual ensemble. Again, you're listening to special coverage of the 2017 State of the City Address being delivered, or going to be delivered, by Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. It's his third State of the City Address. It's the first one he's given with a mayoral challenger on the table.
Martin J. Walsh.
And you just heard the introduction to Mayor Marty Walsh.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you very much. To my mother, Mary, my brother, John, and Laurie, thank you for your love and support. Governor Baker, President Rosenberg, Speaker DeLeo, members of Congress, the state legislature, the Boston City Council, everyone here in Symphony Hall or watching at home tonight, good evening. Three years ago, you gave me the great honor of serving as mayor of the city that I love. At my inauguration, I pledged to listen, to learn, and to lead, because we are in this together. Tonight, I am proud to say we are still listening, learning, and leading. And because of all of our work, together, the state of our city is stronger than it's ever been in our history. We are stronger, not just because of what we've done, but because of who we are. We're a city that believes every single person deserves an equal chance to thrive. And when we stand together, there's nothing that we can't achieve. That's the city that made me who I am, a son of immigrants who needed a second chance and got to live his dream by serving you, the people of Boston. Everything I do as mayor, and the plan that I'll share with you tonight, is to make sure every Bostonian can follow their dreams. Look how far we've come together in 3 years.
We've added 60,000 jobs and cut unemployment to 2.4%, the lowest on record. We're bringing opportunity to the entire city. We tackled our housing shortage by building 19,000 homes, a record 7,400 for low and middle income families. Rents are stabilizing. We made the Boston Public Schools the best they've ever been and the best of any in the country. Last year alone, 21 more schools reached level one or level two status. High school and college graduation rates are at all-time highs. We brought violent crime down by 9%, property crime down by 16%, and just as important, arrests are down 25% since 2014. As I said last year, we make Boston safer not by locking people up, but by lifting people up. Tonight, 1,052 Bostonians who used to live on the streets are in their own home with the services they need to be successful. We ended chronic veterans homelessness, and we're ending all chronic homelessness by 2018. We believe in all of Boston's people. We made the city's leadership and workforce more reflective of our diversity than it's ever been. We added early voting locations across our city and registered more than 30,000 new voters. We delivered better city services than ever before, with a state-of-the-art website, a 311 system, and a performance dashboard called CityScore. We're making Boston a fiber optic city. 27,000 families have new internet and cable options in Dorchester, Roxbury, Rosendale, and West Roxbury, and the rest of the city, it's on its way. We are America's climate champion, with a target date of 2050 for going 100% carbon neutral. We've grown together in 3 years. Our population is up nearly 30,000 people to a 50-year high. We've advanced 35 million square feet of new living and workspace, spanning every neighborhood in our city. Women and men are hard at work building $6.5 billion worth of it right now from Brighton to Hyde Park. We're ranked the best city for startups and a leader in venture capital success. We brought the startup economy to neighborhoods, beginning with the Roxbury Innovation Center. We built Boston's first citywide system of small business supports, and we're encouraging worker-owned co-ops. We made Boston a global headquarters city, a world leader in innovation, life science, finance, and law. And we've also become America's shoe capital, home to New Balance, Converse, Reebok, Puma, and MGMI. We're making sure everyone shares in this success. We secured Boston's first perfect AAA bond rating and have sustained that for 3 years in a row. This year, we gave Boston homeowners one of the biggest tax cuts in modern history. For senior citizens, we upped the water discount to 30%. We got better deals for internet and cable. And we provided over 700 elderly homeowners with home repairs or new heating systems. We've replaced a half of the Boston Fire Department's fleet and buildings Boston's first new firehouses in nearly 30 years.
We've organized 179 companies to close the gender wage gap, and we've trained over 3,000 women to negotiate their own higher pay. We renovated 61 parks and playgrounds, and I'm proposing to use the $100 million from the sale of the Winthrop Square Garage in downtown to strengthen our neighborhoods. That money will go to revitalize public housing in East Boston and South Boston, major investments in Franklin Park and Boston Common, and finally completing the original plan of the Emerald Necklace. Culture in Boston is flourishing. We completed a spectacular Central Library renovation in the Back Bay. We are now investing $90 million in neighborhood branch libraries all across our city. And I can announce tonight, we listen to the community and we're finally bringing library services back to the Chinatown neighborhood. We lifted restrictions on live music and outdoor dining. We got more new and diverse restaurants than Boston's ever seen. We lit up City Hall and turned the plaza into a winter wonderland. We created the first cultural plan in a generation. We put arts funding in our capital budget, and we helped save the Huntington and Colonial Theaters. I want to thank the dedicated public employees who make our progress possible. Community builders like Aisha Johnson at Inspection Services, who help residents and businesses resolve the toughest conflicts. Selfless workers like Daniel Ross of the Parks Department. Daniel found a man having a seizure, placed his coat over him, and held him until the ambulances arrived. Role models like Francisco Melgar, a street worker who came from El Salvador at the age of 13 years old and now devotes his life to the East Boston's youth. And heroes like Boston police officers Richie Santolo and Matthew Morris, wounded, putting their lives on the line to protect the residents in East Boston. They are here with us tonight. Please join me in saluting them. We have made historic progress, and we're just getting started. Together, we've built the foundation. Now we're ready to soar. For the first time in half a century, Boston is a city with a plan. Imagine Boston 2030, a plan drafted by thousands of Bostonians, will shape growth to benefit all of our residents for decades to come. Let's start with jobs. When we pitch Boston as a world innovation leader, GE and many others responded. Our goal is more than new logos in the skyline. It's good jobs and job training for all. We're developing a high-tech manufacturing sector that provides just that in robotics, 3D printing, medical devices, and more. Employers are coming, and they are growing, and they are hiring. And we invited them into our schools to help our young people prepare for those jobs. And we're taking it citywide. We're going to make the Fairmont Line a jobs corridor with affordable housing through the heart of our city, from Newmarket to Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan, High Park, and Reedville. People talk about bringing back manufacturing. We're doing it, and we're doing it the right way, with the jobs of the future and the preparation our young people need to build it. Boston is a city for everyone.
Whatever your age, whatever your income, whatever your dream, you should be able to make a home here. That's why we set and are surpassing our historic housing goals in every single income bracket. We are working with residents to identify the right places for growth. We are helping people stay in their homes and their neighborhoods. We created an Office of Housing Stability, and our home center helped more first-time buyers achieve their dream and more existing homeowners avoid foreclosure than ever before. Moving forward, we are preparing historic investments in affordable housing. Already, we've invested $100 million. Our new requirements on developers calls for another $45 million from recent project approvals. With the backing from Boston voters, we adopted the Community Preservation Act. I want to take a moment to say thank you. Thank you for another $20 million a year to affordable housing, open space, and historic preservation. This year, we'll advance creative ways to lower costs from compact units to community land trusts. And we will file 5 bills at the State House protecting residents from displacement. We are going to use every tool at our disposal to keep Boston a city of neighborhoods and a city for everyone. Getting from good homes to good jobs depends on transportation. In our dynamic city, traffic is a challenge for drivers, cyclists, and walkers alike. It's a challenge we're confronting. While people are talking about infrastructure, we're taking action. Already, we upgraded Upham's Corner, broke ground on a redesigned Commonwealth Avenue from Alston to Fenway, and we're completing Central Square in East Boston. Now we've secured $300 million to take that citywide. We are working with residents to transform Rutherford Ave and Sullivan Square in Charlestown, the North Washington Street Bridge in the North End, the Northern Ave Bridge at the Four Point Channel, and Molina Cass Boulevard in Roxbury in the South End. In addition, I can announce a plan to bring cutting-edge traffic light technology to Boston's busiest streets. We've all been there. God bless you. We've all been there. You hit one red light, and it just seems like you hit them all. New signals will adapt to traffic in real time and work together to keep it flowing. In a city on the move, the street should work for everybody. Our Vision Zero safety plan aims at ending fatalities on our roads. We are installing protected bike lanes downtown and in the Back Bay. We're revitalizing crosswalks and lane markings. We're piloting self-driving cars. And I want to say thank you to the Boston City Council for taking the life-saving step of lowering Boston's default speed limit to 25 miles per hour citywide. The people of Boston also deserve a public transit system that works. I applaud the Common Union and the governor for an agreement that puts the MBTA on stronger fiscal footing. Thank you. Now it's time for a comprehensive, fully funded plan to move the T into the 21st century. That means better commuter rail service, including the Fairmont Line. It means smarter bus routes and dependable trains, and it means new connections for neighborhoods like Mattapan to job hubs like the Longwood Medical Area in Mission Hill. The Boston and Massachusetts economy needs this, so let's work together to get it done. Public schools are the foundation of equal opportunity. But in Boston, as recently as 3 years ago, students faced steep barriers. Not enough pre-kindergarten seats for four-year-olders, the shortest school day in the country, schools built before World War II, and the struggle to get to college and pay for it.
I'm proud to say we're replacing these barriers with bridges into college and career. Today, 725 more children are in high-quality, free pre-kindergarten classrooms in the city. And yes, we used to have one of the shortest days, but we extended it, giving students from kindergarten to eighth grade 120 more hours of learning time, the equivalent of 20 added school days a year. I would like to thank the principals, the teachers, and the parents who made this possible. This year, we'll complete the $73 million Dearborn STEM Academy in Roxbury. And for Boston Public School graduates, we secured free tuition at Bunker Hill, Roxbury, and Mass Bay Community Colleges. We're making great progress, but there's plenty of room for improvement. The gaps that remain come in the shapes of race, language, and need. Equity demands a bold solution. That's why this week I will file legislation to finally eliminate the opportunity gap in early education, and for the first time in Boston's history, offer free pre-kindergarten to every single four-year-old in our city. Our proposal is fully funded by the tourism tax already paid in Boston that produces the annual surplus in the Convention Center Fund. It's only fair that Boston's success benefits all of Boston's children. In addition, in the coming weeks, we will release a 10-year facilities build BPS plan. That means tonight, I can announce that we will invest $1 billion in Boston school buildings. We will create high-quality 21st-century classrooms for every student connected to every neighborhood, college, and workplace in our city. Boston is entering a new era of school investment. So once again, I urge everyone to come together for our students. We are committed to working with our partners on Beacon Hill to fix the education aid and charter school funding, but we need district schools and charter schools to learn from each other, not turn on each other. And we need everyone to understand that better buildings and great configurations means changing the status quo. We all need to trust in our shared values. If we do, we can solve urban education in Boston and for America. I tell students the path to your dreams isn't a straight line, and you don't walk it by yourself. Everyone struggles and needs help. The opioid crisis brings this home. I want to thank the legislature and the governor for passing four pieces of legislation last session aimed at saving lives. Addiction is a cunning and baffling disease, but recovery begins with a simple plea for help. That's why we turned our 311 system into a 24-hour recovery hotline, so we're always ready to answer that call. Tonight, I have a message for everyone here in the hall or watching at home. If you or a loved one has a problem with drugs or alcohol in the city of Boston, call 311 right now. We are here to help. Don't suffer alone. I ask everyone to reach out and be there for your neighbors. The bonds we forge make our city stronger.
That's why we're one of the safest big cities in the country and getting safer every single year. I want to thank the young people, the Boston police officers, the clergy, parents, grandparents, street workers, job trainers, the foundations and the nonprofits for your courageous and relentless relationship building. Together, we have forged the most comprehensive and collaborative public safety strategy in the history of our city. Last year, Boston police officers took 777 guns off the street, and shootings were down 6%. But the work is far from being over. We had 45 homicides in our city last year. That's unacceptable. One is too many, and zero is our goal. To get there, we have to keep digging up the roots of violence and sowing seeds of opportunity. In Operation Exit and Professional Pathways, we're helping young people get the hope, the skill, and the jobs they need to leave the streets behind. We brought back the Boston Police Cadet Program. Our first class is the most diverse ever, with 70% people of color, 33% women, and 100% Boston residents, and they're with us tonight. And tonight, I can announce another vital step. We have created neighborhood trauma teams in Roxbury, Dorchester, Jamaica Plain, East Boston, and Mattapan. In the aftermath of violence, health centers, hospitals, and community groups will coordinate immediate response and sustained recovery for all those affected. Together, we will break the cycle of suffering and violence and bring healing to our city. My plan is clear. Good jobs in every neighborhood, massive investments in affordable housing and open space, infrastructure upgrades to fix traffic, free high-quality pre-kindergarten for all, $1 billion for new schools, and doubling down on community-driven public safety. In other words, a city with its values written into its DNA, a city that lifts everyone up as it rises, a city with a greater future than our past. I got a glimpse of that future in our town hall forum on race we held in November. The conversations weren't easy. Healing never is. But two young Bostonians named Kendra and Dante lifted our hearts. They spoke with honesty and with hope. In them, I saw and felt our city's core strength. Kendra is here, and I'd like to thank her. All across our city, I see young people just starting out. They're breaking down barriers and lifting others up as they rise. The fact is, we don't get far by ourselves, but together we can move mountains. And in divided times, it's never been more true. The power of our value is real. What we've achieved in Boston is said to be impossible nationally. Free community college tuition, expanding housing, reducing incarceration, going carbon neutral, great district schools, great charter schools, bringing back corporate headquarters and manufacturing jobs. We're fighters in Boston. We don't know the word impossible. But we didn't win these victories by fighting against each other. We won them by fighting for each other, shoulder to shoulder and hand in hand.
forging relationships, following through, and never quitting. Knowing that if we share the same values, we will always have common ground to stand on and to build on. Tomorrow, I travel to the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I will work with my fellow mayors to move our cities forward and tackle America's hottest challenges. Cities are the engines of opportunity, drivers of innovation, and the safety nets for the vulnerable. Cities are also gateways for new Americans, like my mother and father and 28% of Bostonians today. We don't just welcome immigrants in Boston, we help them thrive, and we won't retreat an inch. Thank you. In a time of uncertainty, we will step forward with confidence in our values. With trust in government at an all-time low, we prove that government can work for all the people. At a time when cities must lead, Boston is the leader of cities. Whatever happens nationally, I will fight for our values. I will fight for our families, I will fight for our seniors, and for our children, and for our veterans, and our immigrants, and those with disabilities. I will fight for good jobs, and public schools, and affordable housing, and racial justice, and equal rights for all, and I will never stop fighting for recovery. We are in this together, and we will fight every day for each other, for the people of Boston, and for all of you. God bless you, God bless the city of Boston, and God bless the United States of America.
You just heard Boston Mayor Marty Walsh giving the 2017 State of the City Address. Quite a rousing end there. The audience at Symphony Hall responding. The mayor said the state of our city is stronger than it's ever been in our history. At the end of the speech, they're giving a nod to the change on the national level that the nation overall is seeing. He said, at a time when cities must lead, Boston is the leader of cities. He talked about the unemployment rate being down, about violent crime being down, about the construction going on across the city. He said, together we build the foundation. Now we're ready to soar. The mayor also talked about the gaps that remain in the city in terms of progress. He said those gaps come in the shape of race, language, and need. We're joined in the studio tonight by Michael Curry, former head of the Boston branch of the NAACP, by Tiziana Deering, co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College, and by Chris Dempsey, incoming director of transportation for Massachusetts. Now, all of you, when we started our coverage, I asked you for one word or phrase to describe what you wanted to hear from the mayor tonight. Tiziana, you said vision. Chris, you said you wanted to hear about the right kind of growth. And Michael, you said you wanted to hear about results. Chris, let me start with you. Did you hear the mayor talk about the right kind of growth?
I think we did. And I think that it was really interesting because I thought it was a strong speech and it was a quintessentially Marty Walsh speech. It touched on so many things that we know about him. His immigrant family, his roots in Dorchester. There was a nod to not only labor unions, but also cooperation with government and sitting down at the negotiating table. There were a couple mentions of the recovery community. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, you could not confuse this speech with anyone else in Boston. This was definitely Marty Walsh, and I thought it was really strong.
He even talked quite a bit about traffic.
He did. I love the transportation stuff. As a transportation advocate, he hit all of the right points. He was very strong. He said Vision Zero, which is incredibly important to people that use alternative transportation. Talked about unlocking some of these traffic jams that we're seeing in the city. So really hit the right transportation points.
Michael Curry, did you hear him talk about results in the way you were hoping?
I did. I mean, I would agree. Quintessential Marty Walsh speech touched on a lot of things. He always tells the story about his connection to addiction. And I think it's a real personal one for him. Charlie Baker as well. Mm-hmm. They both become the addiction mayor and governor to speak to that issue. I think he touched on affordable housing. He touched on some of the education issues. Key to that is the fact that our kids are learning in schools that are outdated.
Right.
Can't be upgraded in terms of technology and our failing buildings. The only thing that I think I was hoping, and you really can't get in a speech, is what is the gap, right? So people can tell you what they're doing, but does it really meet the need? Does it face the challenge of the problem? That's more you do if you're evaluating a CEO or a president, because they can tell you aspirationally what they want to do, but you also need to know what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And I think that doesn't come across in speech. I think advocates will do that after this speech and start to look at it and see whether the dollars make sense, whether the investments make sense. But I thought excellent speech, one of many he's given, and I've appreciated the points he hit.
Well, so that, Tiziana, that brings us perfectly to you. Did you hear the vision that you wanted? Is this the shining city on a hill for the 21st century?
The last 20%, he started to go there. I would say the first 80% of the speech was sort of an urban mechanics kind of speech. Here's the stuff we're working on. Here's the progress we're making. Here's
35
what we're
million square
on.
Feet of
right, right. $1 billion here, and you know, 75.
Although $1 billion
here,
for new schools in the city,
not
that's,
bad.
That's,
yeah. I'm not sneezing at it. But somewhere towards the end, there, a city that lifts everyone as it rises. Right. This idea that we're a city that will step forward in the confidence of our values, that we fight for each other and we stand together shoulder to shoulder. At the very end, we started to see a call to be something greater than ourselves individually or the sum of our parts, and the potential for Boston to be that city on a hill that I asked for at the beginning. And there was a spark in that last 20% of that speech that I was grateful for.
Yeah, I mean, you could feel his energy rising.
Yeah.
I mean, when he talked about, I mentioned it before, at a time of uncertainty, he says, we will step forward with confidence in our values. At a time when cities must lead, Boston is the leader of cities. I mean, just one we've got a couple seconds here left to go. One last thought from all of you. Do you agree with the mayor that Boston is or can be a leader of cities?
Well, I think we already are. And I think we've shown that over not just decades, but centuries. That doesn't mean that we can't learn from other cities. It doesn't mean that we can't get better. But we should be very proud of the things that are happening in Boston.
Tiziana?
Yes. We're America's civic incubator. We always have been, and we can continue to be.
Michael Curry.
I think we can be, but we should not be satisfied with where we are now.
Michael Curry is the former head of the Boston branch of the NAACP. Always great to have you. Thank you so much for joining
us
tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Chris Dempsey, incoming director of transportation for Massachusetts and former co-chair of No Boston Olympics. Thank you.
Thank you, Magda.
And Tiziana Deering, co-director of the Center for Social Innovation at Boston College. Thank you so very much.
It's been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening. This is special coverage of Mayor Walsh's 2017 State of the City Address. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.